The following is an AI reading of my blog called
Artificial Intelligence is already in us, not just around us.
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
When Buckminster Fuller was asked by a student during a lecture about the possibility of becoming an astronaut, he replied, "You don't understand, you've been an astronaut for a long time, we are all. Astronauts on spaceship Earth. Artificial intelligence has long been a matter of science fiction books and the future being created for us by elite companies in Silicon Valley or China's AI giants. Artificial intelligence has long been all around us, impacting our lives on a daily basis. It decides whether we get a bank loan, it helps us drive more safely, it helps us get a manned spacecraft safely to and from the International Space Station. It tells us when there will be fewer people in the grocery store, when our safety is at risk, and whether that little sphere in the picture of our eye is a serious medical problem or just a harmless floater. But let's go a little further and say that artificial intelligence is really us. Similar to Fuller's student, many believe that artificial intelligence is an external occurrence that will impact our lives, hopefully for the better, while we maintain some unartificial humanness. Thus, the world around us may evolve, but we will remain Homo sapiens. Science fiction novels, particularly those in the cyberpunk genre, discuss augmented human bodies, robotic limbs, artificial eyes, and synthetic organs. The initial steps towards these changes have already taken place, primarily to save lives or restore health thus far. However, there are individuals who become cyborgs or cybernetic organisms not solely due to a health issue, but because they desire to push boundaries further. Kevin Warwick and his wife established the first neuronal level connections via the internet. Neil Harbison had an apparatus implanted that he utilizes to perceive colors. The original goal was to address his color blindness, but he soon realized there's no reason to limit himself to the colors seen by typical individuals when he can also perceive infrared and ultraviolet light, for instance. There are endless debates surrounding the ethics of enhancing the human body in such ways. Nowadays, we have the ability to make genetic alterations to living organisms through CRISPR/Cas9 technology. This will ultimately result in the potential to improve humans at a fundamental level by modifying DNA. In fact, mRNA gene therapy has already been utilized by millions of people via COVID vaccines. Nevertheless, many individuals haven't observed that augmenting our most crucial organ for survival has also been taking place for some time now. That organ is our brain. Our brain's engagement with technology and communication networks is currently enhancing our intelligence. Consider the difference in your intelligence with or without a smartphone connected to the internet. Pavel Luptak, a friend of mine, suggests that when someone faces a life problem, they should explore whether an app exists to solve it. Initially, I found this amusing, but eventually realized that technology genuinely enhances our intellect. It's not merely about searching for information, these advancements actively boost our capabilities. Early technologies in this category likely included calculators, for instance. If I wish to calculate the number of transistors computer processors will possess in a decade based on Moore's law, assuming they currently contain 10 billion transistors, an internet connection isn't required. A calculator can assist with this task, although mental computation proves challenging how many among you could do it. In reality, it is relatively easy, however, we often make errors. Alternatively, imagine wanting to purchase a new patio couch and being uncertain whether it will fit beneath your window. If I have a modern smartphone, I open the Measure app and use augmented reality to look at the space under the window. By clicking on two points, I can determine their distance with acceptable precision. My brain is not capable of doing that, but if I consider my smartphone as an extension of myself, it makes me more intelligent. Now, let's discuss possible scenarios for the relationship between humans and AI. Artificial intelligence will not follow just one direction, neither now nor in the future. This applies to both its applications and specific forms. In this text, we won't focus too much on how these scenarios might play out, whether artificial superintelligence will kill us or say, "I'm not enjoying this boring time with ants." and leave Earth in search of other more advanced intelligence forms for interaction. Instead, let's explore different types of relationships between humans and AI, considering our perspective as humans. The basic options involve artificial intelligence evolving independently of us. A sufficiently strong artificial intelligence will be programmed to continue its development on its own. This perspective of decoupling AI from humans still persists. If my device can display moments in my life when I search for the word love, reflecting times when love was felt or given, I still perceive it as a program separate from me that has the ability to sort photos outside of my control. To some extent, this is accurate. However, our body's boundaries allow us to differentiate between what we can do and what an artificial intelligence or another agent outside of us accomplishes. We interact with our phone by touching its screen and talking to it, enabling information transfer from our consciousness to the consciousness outside us. In return, information is primarily received through visual or auditory sensory input. The process becomes fascinating when we understand that we're developing a machine intuition specifically tailored for us. Even though our personal information doesn't directly transfer from our neurons to the artificial neural network, eventually what our device displays when we mention love will be exclusive to us, influenced by our interactions. Now let's delve into the concept of machine intuition. Many individuals unfamiliar with artificial intelligence imagine it as intricate programs filled with rules and pre-programmed knowledge. In truth, though, AI, particularly in its form of neural networks, resembles well-honed intuition more closely. My understanding of love isn't embedded within an algorithm instructing me to present images of my partner, children, and pets. It functions more akin to a neural network that mirrors the state of hypnagogia when the notion of love arises, spontaneously triggering memories. But if we train the neural network to show us something closer to our intuition than explicit algorithmic rules, a question arises if it's my machine intuition that I've gradually trained according to my preferences, even based on my intuition and not explicit rules, isn't it kind of my intuition? So can we really say that we end at the physical and sensory limit of our bodies? Here we have the second question, which is continuity. We consider the eye as a type of continuity in the processes of consciousness and the body. Perhaps we don't see machine intuition as part of ourselves because we do not have it all the time. Long philosophical works have been written on this subject, but I will offer two perspectives at least. If your self is based on continuity, imagine encountering a self that was half your age. Suppose you are 30 years old and having a conversation with your 15-year-old self. Would you enjoy it? Do you share the same views? Note, the AI has maintained the original meaning and details while adapting the text for spoken language by breaking up long sentences and using more natural wordings. Is your logical system the same? You don't even share a large part of your cells anymore, and your neural network is wired differently too. You have about half of your memories in common, but even that's just what you believe, because as we revisit memories, we rewrite them with new perspectives and attach new experiences and angles to them. You have very little in common with your 15-year-old self, but you still consider yourself an identity. A useful analogy is the idea of a river that does not have a regulated flow. For example, the Belor River in Slovakia. It is not defined by the water molecules that flow through it. These are always different because the river is always flowing. Nor is it defined by its exact location on a map, because its flow changes with floods and current natural conditions. So how do we know it is the same river? A good answer may be to go look at the source. If a river has the same source, it is the same river. So, the continuity of our consciousness is something that we can link to our origin. We have a shared history within ourselves. But what if, from some point on, we attach new modules to our consciousness? For instance, a topic-based photo search engine, like a new intuitive interface to the memories captured in photographs. Will this artificial form of machine intuition become as much a part of us as the ability to compute differential equations? Most of us have not had this ability since birth, so it is not present in every aspect of our consciousness history. However, taking away a part of our consciousness does not mean losing our identity. If we lose a limb in an accident, it doesn't mean we cease to exist or that it's no longer our body. Our body shell may change, but it doesn't cause us to lose our identity. Now, imagine replacing that lost limb with an artificial one and becoming cyborgs. Is the prosthetic part now considered as the new I? Sensory experience the body boundary. Try this experiment. Sit down or lie down comfortably. As you are doing this, try to gradually turn off the modules that recognize objects in your field of vision. If there's a white wall in front of you, focus on perceiving its whiteness. This sensation is created because the light reflected from the white wall stimulates specific photoreceptors in your eyes, which then convert these signals into nerve impulses. Next, attempt to turn off object boundary recognition and just perceive colors. Then, gradually reintroduce object recognition. Afterward, activate 3D vision. Now, name the objects you see, for example, table and lamp. The experience I described is something that I practice often. It helps me understand that what I see, hear, feel, and perceive as my surroundings are all happening in the same place where my thoughts reside. I don't mean this in any mystical or esoteric sense. I'm not trying to argue for the existence of a soul separate from the mind. I mean the complete opposite. The world that I perceive around me is generated within my own consciousness, as a matter of experience, by initially arriving at my sensory inputs. It's the meanings we assign to them using different parts of our brains, which occurs inside our minds and through our neural networks. The fact that I see a monitor or paper in front of me with the letters of this text written on it is indeed sensory input from photons outside of me, but in reality, the raster of colors from two eyes slightly apart are first processed by the brain, removing floaters in our eyebulbs and small veins, etc. Then, our brain perceives these shapes, recognizing them as letters, and subsequently feeds those letters into our consciousness, which converts the concepts into thoughts. At this very moment, this text is within your own consciousness. Although originating from an object beyond your consciousness, it exists similarly to memories of breakfast and thoughts about post-reading activities. Consider sharing this text with friends on social media. To encounter this phenomenon, follow these steps. How does artificial intelligence fit in? Thanks to brain's neuroplasticity, we can create comparable effects by connecting our brains to AI. This process is not as complex as it may seem. Artificial senses establishing new senses, like the ability to perceive colors, is relatively easy and straightforward. While it sounds incredibly advanced, generating artificial senses is simple. A prime example was a device people wore on their leg in the form of a belt or bracelet, which added the sense of recognizing cardinal directions akin to a compass. The device functioned by utilizing several vibration motors taken from old Nokia phones. At specific intervals, the motor pointing towards the north would always vibrate. If the individual was facing north, the motor situated in front of them would shake. In contrast, if they were facing east, the motor positioned on their left side would produce vibrations. This rudimentary tool served as an aid for orientation purposes, but eventually users began to experience an intriguing outcome. They no longer perceived the sensation as mere vibrations. Instead, they started to perceive their orientation, almost innately knowing precisely where north was located. When recalling past events or scenarios, these individuals could effortlessly identify their orientation at that specific moment in relation to cardinal directions, without consciously recalling the vibration of a particular motor. When recalling a conversation, people remember not just who they were talking with and about, but also details like what the person wore, the smell of the surroundings, whether they felt hot or cold, and their orientation. This demonstrates the brain's neuroplasticity and implies that the interface between senses can be relatively universal. If we introduce a new sense, our brains learn to connect and understand it. In my personal experience, I've tried 3 additional senses: time sense, electrohearing, and audio, e.g. neurofeedback. The time sense involved wearing a watch that emitted different electrical signals at regular intervals. These watches let you know the exact time and help you perceive how time is passing. However, this sensation is quite distinct from glancing at a watch. Its continuous information, your brain learns to interpret and use. In this instance, the effect was particularly intriguing because my brain began using the information before I could consciously determine the time. As I received a subtle electrical signal every second, my brain acquired an accurate external clock. Once my brain grasped this new sense, which took just a few minutes, the creator of the project accelerated the signal and conducted another reaction time test. My performance in this test was notably better than under typical circumstances. What made it even more fascinating was when I walked around the room, it felt as though people were moving slower. This sensation arose because my brain employed the external watch as a reference for time, and as it incrementally accelerated, so did my brain, giving me the impression that everything surrounding me appeared sluggish. The opposite effect occurs as well. If the signal to which your brain has grown accustomed slows down, you become fatigued and eventually fall asleep. ElectroSlutch is a project created by Janosch Gruska, which enables you to transform signals from electromagnetic fields into sound. It's a compact gadget that connects to your headphones, allowing you to perceive electromagnetic fields. A washing machine, dishwasher, tram, or even a computer, all of them produce unique sounds based on their operation. With the ElectroSlutch, you can distinguish between a live cable and an unplugged one with ease. However, I haven't had sufficient time using the ElectroSlutch to assimilate it as a sense yet. There are individuals who have explored other ways to integrate electromagnetic field perception, such as embedding magnets in their fingers. EEG neurofeedback represents the sensory experience of brain activity processes through feedback auditory, in my case. This tool grants me access to perceive some of the unconscious aspects of my brain. With adequate time and practice, I can adapt this device into a new sense. Artificial senses indicate that the human-machine interface, including machine intuition and artificial intelligence, can be direct and at a very low level. So, one possible scenario is the integration of humans and AI into a single entity. Our thoughts and behaviors will be trained for us by a unique artificial intelligence. This won't be something outside us, special, but part of our identity. We'll see it as part of ourselves, as something involved in the continuity of ourself. As part of our body and mind. Emulated humans, another not so often mentioned form of the relationship between humans and artificial intelligence, is described by Professor Robin Hanson in his excellent book, The Age of M. In this exploration, he examines a potential future using existing sciences like physics, computer science, and biology. He explores the possibility of artificial intelligence not emerging as a new form of intelligence. Instead, he envisions a scenario where we learn how to emulate human consciousness slightly sooner. This means that rather than developing an advanced neural network or another type of artificial intelligence capable of general reasoning, our understanding of the human brain's biology will advance enough for us to replicate its processes in a computer. As a result, we would create a copy of human consciousness in a computational environment. We might not know how to generate different types of consciousness, but by studying various types of neurons and their interconnections, learning mechanisms, and so forth, we could emulate these processes on a computer system. The process is quite similar to simulating chemical procedures on a computer, such as searching for molecules with particular characteristics. We do not necessarily need to know how to create a molecule with specific qualities, but provided we understand the structure of the molecule, we can devise an algorithm that calculates its behavior. In certain scenarios, this emulation may take various forms. For instance, there's the question of whether we replicate the consciousness of a living individual along with all its features. I'm quite doubtful about this possibility. However, if we can emulate the brain of a newborn and its development, we could potentially create a human consciousness that, instead of perceiving through sight, either observes using cameras in the real world or directly functions within virtual reality. We may then nurture such consciousness as though we're communicating with biological consciousness. It becomes intriguing when we realize that this type of consciousness can possess superior qualities even while merely emulating biological processes. The growth of neurons is not limited by physical factors like the size of the skull or the mother's birth canal in biological humans. In real time, these processes can be easily emulated with powerful computers, which allows for faster emulation. If needed, we can speed up this emulated consciousness tenfold, making real-time seem to pass much slower for those with accelerated consciousness, similar to when I experienced an increase in my external time sense. Meetings between M's will require arranging not just time and virtual location, but also the speed at which the meeting takes place. Communicating with someone running at 100 times slower speed can be quite dull. In this section, we explore the possibility of slowing down, a concept introduced by Hansen. He suggests that emulated brains may age due to older neural networks not adapting well overfitting. Regardless of whether this theory holds true or not, there are benefits to slowing down, even for those who aren't retired. For instance, if someone wishes to accumulate more wealth, they could choose to overfeed every other day and hibernate the rest of the time. Alternatively, they might slow their pace tenfold, resulting in life moving at 10 times their speed. In a subjective year, this would mean experiencing 10 years of technological progress outside their world. If they invest their money into an appreciating product, its value will increase 10 times faster. Consequently, the slower M will become wealthier more rapidly, saving on computing power and having savings that work at a quicker pace. Over time, it's likely that emulated individuals will transition into their own realm. They won't need to reside in cities like us, but instead special data centers would be created for them. They will have a unique perspective on life and death. In fact, one typical event might involve creating a temporary copy. If M needs to quickly understand something, he can create a short-lived duplicate solely for solving that specific task, submitting the answer, and then ceasing to exist. A single human instance could operate countless duplicates concurrently, all aware of their brief lifespans and eventual deaths. Over time, they might become culturally detached from regular humans, but will maintain compatibility in some ways, like communication capabilities. It's possible that these accelerated emulated individuals may even develop the artificial superintelligence. Emulated people aren't inherently more intelligent. There could be a boundary to intelligence determined by our neural network structure. Simply emulating additional neurons might not suffice. Thinking faster doesn't necessarily mean higher intelligence or a different type of intelligence, although it's possible that more copies of more intelligent neural networks will exist. Imagine a gorilla. Some monkeys close to us can master sign language communication and can communicate with humans at the level of a child of about 3 years old. For an example, I recommend the documentary about Coco the gorilla. That doesn't mean you just wait longer. Coco couldn't write this kind of text if she lived 1,000 years. There is a qualitative limitation in her brain, not just a speed limitation. Likewise, emulated humans can indeed think faster, but it's not clear that human intelligence emulated in this way can scale qualitatively. Conclusion: many of these scenarios are happening simultaneously. With technology, we are already expanding the capabilities of our consciousness and our bodies, and we are gradually connecting with artificial intelligence. The connection can be established through various methods, such as implementing an interface similar to the Neuralink project. However, if this method doesn't work out, any alternative approach could also suffice, considering that the human brain possesses remarkable adaptability when it comes to integrating new senses. AI algorithms are designed based on the functioning of the human brain, and AI research has a close relationship with advancements in understanding how our brains operate. There's a possibility that this ongoing research will pave the way for developing even more sophisticated biological models of AI, ultimately culminating in an emulation of human consciousness. Throughout this journey, we're also creating increasingly advanced algorithms for genuine artificial intelligence, which might eventually give rise to a novel form of machine intuition. Over time, this could potentially surpass our own intelligence. It's crucial to note that these pathways don't exist independently, they intersect and inspire one another in various ways. They also take advantage of interconnections with new technologies, such as faster processors, more efficient power sources and batteries, virtual and augmented reality technologies, FAST. Communication networks and technologies representing digital scarcity, like Bitcoin. So, it's good to approach these technologies with an open mind and see completely new uses for them that are very likely to change what it means to be human long before we create something else. Outside of ourselves, why not start now?
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.